This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
What's up? It's your Tuesday. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Dave Festchuk is here. I saw O-Dog tweet this morning, and it's true. 4 weeks from today, Overdrive, Hayes, Noodles, the O-Dog returns in full force. We're 4 weeks away, Dave, from that reset, the start of the new sports year, right? Because Labor Day passes. Hockey's close. Baseball's right into the stretch drive, although that won't be relevant here. Basketball's getting closer. You got a NFL starting up. Bunch of things going. So we're kind of in the dog days, but you can see the light at the end of the sports tunnel right now.
Yeah, though, from my golf round yesterday, which I played in the morning in a sweater the entire time because it was freaking chilly. It felt like October. So, you know, it's as though we're skipping months here weather-wise, Scotty. And even though we're still a month away from, you know, as you say, the metaphorical start of the new sports season.
So you're golfing in a sweater.
It was terrible.
The morning of August the 7th.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever done that before, I bet.
No. Usually you're out there and you can't have enough water and you're sweating and you got sunscreen on. I didn't need sunscreen. I had the sweater on, never felt like taking it off. I mean, it's just abominable that we have to deal with this. Well, and we just had a tough winter too, I think. It felt tough. And now we got a pretty crappy summer. Not enjoying it, Scotty.
We need like El Nino for the rest of eternity.
Yeah.
Because that's where we always get good, right? We get the warmer than the normal winter.
Yeah.
It rains. It's that misty, pissy stuff that falls. But at least it's not minus a gazillion.
Well, it's funny because I played that El Nino, the last one we had two winters ago. I played golf Christmas Eve.
No way.
In Niagara on St. David's Golf Club, little nine-holer. Right on the escarpment that drains really well. It's incredibly sandy soil. And it was like 12 Celsius and sunny. And it wasn't like yesterday. It was like 18 Celsius in August.
Right.
Like, think about that.
And I do remember that Christmas Eve because we took some family photos outside, you know, to send off to people who don't believe that it's ever above freezing in Canada at any point in the season. And it was suns out, guns out.
Yeah, exactly. It was great. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And that led to a really good winter, and then we had a hot summer last year. We're getting screwed, Dave.
Totally.
We're getting our get back. We're getting got.
I think we are getting got. I hate getting got.
But we're inside, and we're ready to pump it out over the next 3 hours. Jesse Barfield is going to join us, we think, in the 6 o'clock hour right now. And he has been one of a number of ex-Blue Jays. Roberto Alomar is another. To have tweeted support for Marcus Stroman over the last little while. Mm-hmm. Stroman, of course, has been at the forefront of a lot of talk around baseball. And if you know Marcus at all, if you follow him on Twitter or Instagram, i.e. you haven't been blocked, which would put you in the minority.
Yes.
In the media realm, at least. He's willing to fight back. And so Jesse has tweeted something out in the last couple of days saying, hey, Marcus, keep being you, da 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 da. So we'll talk to Jesse Barfield about the Stroman situation. We'll talk to Barfield about the Bautista situation. And Buster Olney was on Naylor and Landsberg in the morning this morning with a pretty epic thought of it. I guess you could call it a hot take, although I tend not to like to describe anything that somebody like Buster Olney says as a hot take, because if he's saying it, chances are 6, 8, 10 people around the league have told him.
Exactly.
He's got an informed opinion, so we'll deal with that in just a moment. Donovan Bailey, a little bit later on this hour, what could have been for Andre DeGrasse. And I just wonder, Dave, you know, look, he yanked his hamstring, he's done for the year.
Yep.
But he's watching that race, 35-year-old Justin Gatlin, who played the heel role, whether he wanted to or not. And, you know, Gatlin's got a past, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Was not the popular victor in the 100-meter race over the weekend at the World Championships in London. But 35 years old, Usain Bolt ends up in his final 100-meter race finishing third. And I just have to wonder, if I'm Andre DeGrasse, what am I thinking after that race and in the subsequent days? What could have been? It could have been me.
Yeah.
You got to think that.
Oh, you have to think that. And why wouldn't we think that? I mean, he's, as much as he's still unproven to a degree, this is a guy who had run the season's best time, albeit extremely wind-aided, of 9.69 in Stockholm, I guess it was, a couple of months back. And his career best, 9.91, was better than the time Justin Gatlin won with, 9.92. So it only goes to reason that he was there. If he had been there, that race was his for the taking. He would have been the favorite. And there's every reason to believe he would have beaten everybody in the field.
Right. So we'll talk to Donovan Bailey about what must be going through DeGrasse's mind right now. And I think Donovan will probably have an opinion on Gatlin himself winning. So we'll get into that. And Gatlin, of course, as I said, 35 years old, but with a very checkered past in track and field. Bob Weeks will be along, and we'll get into the PGA Championship this weekend, and also the impending changes to the PGA schedule. Some major changes, and how will that affect the Canadian Open and other tournaments over the course of the year. We expect Brady Quinn to be along. We'll get into Jay Cutler joining the Miami Dolphins. But let's fire up this clip from this morning. Naylor and Landsberg in the morning. Buster Olney guested with Matt Cause in for Dave Naylor and Michael Landsberg. And the Jose Bautista topic came up. And here's what it is. Bautista has a mutual option, which means that both team and player would need to pick it up in order for it to take effect for 2018, that would pay him $17 million. I think it's very clear that the Blue Jays will have no interest in bringing Jose Bautista back at $17 million. But would they have any interest in bringing him back, having declined the mutual option, at less money? Say like a one-year $3 million deal or a one-year $5 million deal. And three and five are just two examples, but that's chump change in Major League Baseball today.
Yeah.
Well, here's Buster Olney, ESPN's Buster Olney, on Naylor and Landsberg in the morning, saying the Blue Jays probably have no interest, and he would be surprised if anybody does.
I mean, let's face it, the way it's setting up right now, because as you mentioned, it's, you would assume he's not going to be back next year, he probably is going to be doing well to get a minor league deal, non-roster invite with some team in 2018 because of the concerns about the age, the injury history, and the performance.
Talk about a precipitous decline. Now, I think the decline with Jose Bautista has been going on here for a couple of years, but it hasn't been off a cliff. If you wanted to convince yourself, Dave, that last year's decline was related to the two injuries he had when he messed up his toe running into the fence in Philadelphia, came off the DL, then twisted his knee, getting his cleat caught in the turf at Rogers Center, and had to miss some time as a result of that, I suppose I could give that to you, but he's been out there every day this year. Every day.
Yeah.
And he's, outside of the month of May, completely fallen apart.
Well, give him points for durability, because he hasn't missed a game.
Well, can I just jump in on that before
sure you
finish
can.
Your thought? You know, part of the deal, he's got the mutual option, right? So let's just say it gets picked up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vesting option for 2019, and the option for 2019 at $20 million vests if he plays 300 games combined this year and next. So there is incentive. I'm not saying that he would pull the chute and go on the disabled list with some phony injury in an alternate universe, but there is incentive for Jose Bautista to be on the field at least 150 times this year to get him halfway to the vesting option for 2019. It's probably pointless now because, as I said, the mutual option's not going to be picked up, but I think that's at least a small part of it.
Yeah. No, and it's amazing because you look at it, Scotty. We're only 17 months, I believe, removed from his big day, the opening day of training camp, where he laid all his cards on the table and you know, made massive buzz in the baseball community by essentially telling the world that he felt underappreciated and definitely underpaid by the Blue Jays, and that
he would be the one guy to defy Father Time.
Exactly. Explained that he would not be affected by the ravages of his late 30s. Of course, now that he's about to turn 37 in October, we're seeing it right before our eyes that Father Time remains undefeated. Because this is a guy who, when he was 30, led baseball in OPS with over 1,000. And now he's down to, what's his OPS today? 704. He's gone from 1,000 OPS guy, world-class hitter, world-class slugger, to, as at age 33, down in the 900s, age 35 last year into the 800s, and this year into the 700s, which is, by the way, below average.
Right, and OPS is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage, the two added together.
Exactly.
The frightening number there, Dave, is the slugging percentage portion of that.
Yeah.
He's still on base, I think, 325-ish, somewhere in there, which for a 215, 220 batting average is a pretty nice disparity. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's hitting 270 and getting on base 380. That's totally different. That's a much better season. But the disparity, my point is he's still taking his walks.
Right.
But the slugging has just absolutely fallen off the map. And he's not queuing anything up really anymore.
No, he's not. And if you look at his WAR, if you're into that stat, I mean, at his peak, he was an 8.1 WAR guy when he was third in MVP voting. Right now, he's a negative 1.1, which means you could bring up an average replacement player from the minor leagues, and that guy would be better than Jose Bautista right now, according to the advanced analytics.
In this day and age, they say that one win, so a one WAR player,
which is what Jose was last year.
Right, and if you're kind of a fringe baseball fan and you're not in tune with the advanced analytics, wins above replacement, WAR, is what we're talking about here. So a replacement-level player, i.e. a call-up from the minor leagues, would be a 0.0. So it then tracks, based on a number of factors, offensive and defensive, how many wins are you worth to your team? They say in this day and age, Dave, that a one WAR player is worth $8 million.
Okay.
So a victory, a win, is worth $8 million. So if you track that, his 2010 season, where he was an 8-WAR player, he would have been justified in a free capitalist world to make $64 million on that season. And now, he's a sub-WAR player. He's effectively a replacement or sub-replacement level player.
In other words, he should be paying the Blue Jays.
Yeah, well,
he should be paying them back.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works.
I don't think that's how it works.
And I don't think the way that Jose views the contract he signed long-term with Alex Anthopoulos, I think it turned out to be 6 and 79. It was 5 and 65 guaranteed at the time, and then the option got picked up. I think he looks at that as pretty good value for the Blue Jays, which is inarguable.
Yeah, but you know what? You know who cries for Jose Bautista? Nobody, because he's making 18 schmil U.S. this year to be a schmuck, basically, to be a below replacement level player, albeit a player that shows up every day. Give him that. He has shown up every day to the ballpark and been in every game the Blue Jays have played, good and bad, and mostly, frankly, bad.
Well, and to pick up on Buster Olney's point, You go through the league and you say to yourself, well, who would be interested in Jose Bautista? He's not a good defensive right fielder anymore. Really hasn't been for a couple of years.
Well, since the arm went.
And he is not hitting enough to be a first baseman. So that eliminates the National League. So we have whittled down in a 10-second conversation 15 of the 30 teams.
Right.
Then go through the American League. The Blue Jays are going to say goodbye to him. The bad teams have no need for him, right? I mean, they're not looking for a Bautista-like stopgap. So that eliminates, well, we already know Baltimore won't have any interest. There are 12,000 fans who show up to their games each night, don't want to see Jose Bautista play. But the Detroits of the world, the White Sox of the world, the Athletics of the world, Texas, he would never go and play in Texas. What use would the Angels have for him? They already have a Pujols type anchoring them down. I can take you through most of the teams in the American League and give you a reason why they wouldn't necessarily be interested. So you flip back to what Buster said, Dave, that he would be in tough to get a minor league deal. He probably gets one of those, but he's got an invite to spring training, and he's going to have to show whichever team brings him in March that he's worthy of one of the 25 men's, one of the 25 roster spots on the opening day roster.
Yeah.
He's going to have to prove it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, this will be a situation where Jose Bautista, he'll not only have to prove that he's still a viable player, he'll also have to benefit from massive injuries, you'd have to believe. Like, the only way he would ever get a spot on a roster is if that team was absolutely decimated by injury, and he sort of became the de facto replacement guy in lieu of any other viable option because five of our guys, or not five, but two or three of our outfielders went down, and therefore we're down to Jose Bautista, don't you think? I mean, that's the way it would have to line up probably right. If he wants to play in the big leagues next year in April.
I got to be honest with you. We're sitting here talking about it. I was discussing it with Tyler Hunt, our producer, and you and I green room a little bit before the show. And it's just stunning, Dave. Look, it's not stunning based on his performance, based on the numbers. But to think, as you said, that we're 17 months from the big bomb, the pipe bomb. In spring training 2016, we're 22 months removed from the bat flip.
Yes.
Less than 2 years removed from the bat flip. And Jose Bautista has become, in a lost season, somewhat of an irrelevant player. And, you know, Richard Griffin was on with Mike Hogan an hour or so ago, and he said, look, the Jays have to cut ties. And I think they've got to cut ties for two reasons. First of all is the obvious baseball reason, that it is time to move on. But the second one is you don't want to remember Jose Bautista in Toronto trying to hang on any longer than this has already played out. He could come back to the Jays next year in a hypothetical situation and have another down year, Dave. And in my view, when we look back 10 years from now, it would have no effect on our memories of 2010 to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
We would look at that six-year run and go, this is one of the franchise's all-time great positional players. But we're living this right now. And I just don't think any of us have the stomach to sit and watch an all-time franchise great continue to whittle and rot away while still wearing the uniform. And so I think from an optics point of view, almost as much from an emotional point of view, it's important to cut ties with Bautista as it is from a simple baseball strategic point of view.
Well, and that has to be the priority here, right? I mean, you're not running guys.
But I'm saying they're both aligned.
They're aligned. They're definitely aligned. And it is, it's always sad to see a guy decline before your eyes, right? Especially a guy that seems so defiant, a guy who seemed, and you kind of, like, when he talked about how he was going to put the conventional wisdom on its head when it came to aging in baseball, there were reasons to believe it, right? There were, like, he did have this impeccable track record of taking care of his body and figuring things out late in his career, and you thought, well, he doesn't have as many miles in the odometer as some players because he didn't play regularly in his 20s, right? He was a journeyman for so long in his 20s. And then you had things going on in Boston, like Tom Brady, who just turned 40, winning five Super Bowls. You had David Ortiz having one of his best seasons, if not his best season, at age 40 last year. And you thought, well, maybe it's possible, right? Maybe this guy can, in this day and age of sports science, with all we know about, you know, the things you do to recover and rejuvenate, and all we know about the fountains of youth that exist around the world, that, you know, the richest athletes seem to frequent now and then and come back rejuvenated. I gave him a chance to be much better than he is right now at age 37. And yet we've just seen the bat speed fall off, and we're about to see him set a career high for strikeouts. He's definitely going to set it if he keeps playing. He's already had 112. The most he's ever had in a season is 116, and this guy's got, what has he got, 52 games left. So he's going to shatter his career record for strikeouts at a moment where his, as you say, his advanced stats put him below the average minor league replacement player. It's humiliating stuff. And the idea that next year he could find himself as essentially an afterthought who's going to end up in a spring training camp with no hope at making a major league roster, it's frankly shocking.
A Brady Quinn, ex-Notre Dame quarterback and Cleveland Browns quarterback, will be our guest at 6 o'clock, and we'll get into the Jay Cutler to Miami scenario here, but I wanted to play this clip for you, Dave, because I have to be honest. My brother is a diehard Dolphins fan, so I know a Dolphins fan. And they made the playoffs last year. They were the sixth seed in the AFC with Ryan Tannehill. It was Adam Gase's first year with the Dolphins, and they got off to a tough start, but had a bit of a rejuvenation through the middle half and latter part of the season, and they got in. They got smoked by the Steelers in the wild card round, but they got in. And the AFC East for the last 15, 17, 18 years has just been the New England Patriots. The 1 year the Dolphins won the division, 2008, when Brady got hurt in week one. But outside of that, it's been the Patriots and the fight amongst the other three teams for some kind of relevance. And the Jets as a wild card team under Rex Ryan got to the AFC Championship game a couple of years with Mark Sanchez and a strong defense. I get all that. But it's essentially been the fight for relevance. So Tannehill goes down. And there's all this, is it going to be Kaepernick? Is it going to be this guy? Is it going to be what about Jay Cutler, who was quarterbacking the Bears in 2015 when Adam Gase was Chicago's offensive coordinator?
Right.
Well, it turns out that it is Jay Cutler. $10 million for this season, possibility of $3 million more in incentives, which would take the contract to $13 million. Now, this guy thought he was going to the broadcast booth. He pulled the Tony Romo. There wasn't enough interest around the league. Cutler is a dour. There's always been doubts about his level of care, his level of compete in his 11 years in the NFL. He only quarterbacked two winning teams. He shows up in Miami. Again, he's been spending most of his offseason preparing to be a broadcaster, not a quarterback. But if there was ever a Jay Cutler moment, and remember, this is a guy going into Tom Brady's division. So the juxtaposition there can't be ignored. If there was ever a Jay Cutler moment, it was this at his introductory press conference.
Well, the good thing is I play quarterback, so I don't really have to be in that great of cardiovascular shape. But I'll be fine. Adam knows kind of what I've been up to, so we'll figure it out along the way.
So you got Tom Brady. He and Giselle have a personal chef, and I think he eats blueberries and... Is there a strain of fish that has enough antioxidants that allows Brady to ingest? I think he eats strawberries. He might have raspberries. He doesn't eat any crap.
I've researched Tom Brady's diet extensively. No sugar, no flour, nothing white, essentially.
Yeah.
So you got nothing we enjoy, Scotty. No dairy, no salt that's white. He only uses the pink salt. Special
salt. The hell is that? I didn't know there was a pink salt.
The Himalayan pink salt. That's Brady's big thing.
The Himalayan pink salt.
Yeah, look it up. It's out there. It's expensive.
Wow.
As you would expect.
Okay, so you've got the Himalayan pink salt eating Tom Brady playing the Miami Dolphins and this guy twice.
Well, the good thing is I play quarterback, so I don't really have to be in that great of cardiovascular shape.
Like, you've got Tom Brady eating nothing but blueberries, working out like a fiend day in and day out, 40 years old, still dominating, wanting to play till he's 50. And two times this year, he's going to play this guy.
Well, the good thing is I play quarterback, so I don't really have to be in that great of cardiovascular shape.
Like, is Jay Cutler under the impression that he's now on the World Pro Darts Tour?
Why would he care? He's making $10 million. Like, it's fantastic. God bless him.
I love it, but it's not billiards. It's not bowling. I mean, you do have to run around out there.
I want so badly for the Miami Dolphins to make the playoffs this year. Not just for my brother's sake, because I want the Jay Cutler Renaissance to be something. The unexpected to become a major, major story here. Jay Cutler, and oh, by the way, 0-3 lifetime against New England. Now, the first one was in 2008 when Brady was hurt, when Cutler was playing for Denver. They got smoked in his two starts with the Bears against the Patriots and Brady in 2010 and 2014. The Bears got smoked in both games. So he's 0-3 against the Patriots in his career, 0-2 lifetime against Tom Brady.
But think about this. Like, this is an illustration of how little NFL owners want to shine Colin Kaepernick, right? They signed Jay Cutler. Like, Jay Cutler's retirement letter. Have you ever read that thing? By the way, which he wrote, like, less than, like, 4 months ago.
Did he say, I'm looking forward to not having to be in cardiovascular shape?
Basically, he did. He said, I don't feel anyone ever retires from the NFL. And I'm quoting here, you are either forced to leave or you lose the desire to do what's required to keep going. End quote. In other words, he's halfway between, and what he went on to say, I'm in between those two situations at this point in my life. So he's in between being forced to leave and not giving a crap about football anymore. Think about that. So he's essentially acknowledged 4 months ago that he's not good enough to play in the NFL, and he also doesn't want to play football anymore. Think about this. And this is the guy the Miami Dolphins looked at and said, we want that guy instead of the dude with the Castro t-shirt named Colin Kaepernick.
Well, though there is a Miami angle to that, which we can certainly get into. The one thing I'll say for Cutler, I mean, he knows what he's saying. He's not a dumbass. He went to Vanderbilt. That's the Harvard of the SEC. But,
well, maybe he's too smart to want to keep playing football.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. How many more shots to the head does he want to take? We'll get back into that with Brady Quinn, and Dave and I will continue to track it over the course of the program. The Kaepernick angle, I know people roll their eyes. It does get a little old. Well, not really. I mean, there is a story there without question. So we'll continue to touch on that. Coming up next, what could have been for Andre DeGrasse? Injured, misses the 100-meter race in London at the World Championships. Usain Bolt finishes third, and DeGrasse's personal best of 9.91 would have been good enough to win that race had he been healthy and had he replicated it. We'll go to an expert. Donovan Bailey will join Dave and me next on Overdrive. Stay with us, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk, it's Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. The question is, what must Andre DeGrasse be thinking after watching Justin Gatlin win the 100-meter final at the World Championships in London over the weekend? DeGrasse, of course, went down last week with a hamstring injury, and he looks at that and he knows that his personal best, 9.91, set in Rio last year, would have been good enough to win that race, would have been good enough to beat, among others, Usain Bolt in Bolt's final 100-meter race. Let's get to Donovan Bailey, good enough to take some time to join us to break down that race and what DeGrasse must be thinking. Donovan, thank you so much for joining us. I'll throw it right at you. What do you think Andre DeGrasse is thinking right now?
Well, the only person that can... Well, first of all, guys, thanks for having me. The only person that can truly answer that question is Andre. So I'm not going to even try to speculate, but I'm very certain that I know that his preparation for the World Championships in London was for him to go in and dethrone Usain and to win the race. So I'm very certain that he's thinking that had he been healthy and had he been there, then obviously the victory would be his.
So, Donovan, we look at it and we say, hey, the time that Justin Gatlin ran to win against Bolt, 9.92, it's a smidgen slower than Andre's best career time, which he ran at the Rio Olympics of 9.91. I know that's simplistic, but is there something to the fact that, you know, clearly DeGrasse had enough in the tank to win had he been healthy?
Well, yeah, listen, that's really what it is. It comes down to the race, it comes down to the environment, it's the wind. You know, every single person is going to. Every single person is. You know, they're just in a straight lane ahead of them, and so clearly, I'm very certain that Andre just wanted to be there. Andre just wanted to be in the race, and with the time that he set in Rio, I mean, for sure he wanted to. He wanted to go and compete against those guys, and I'm very certain that he wanted that victory against Usain.
You think you would have beat him? Do you what's your feeling? Just your own opinion about what would have happened?
Well, listen, like I said before, you know, you don't ever bet in the major championships on the major championships with Usain because he'd proven over and over again that he had the the preparation and the talent to win. However, clearly he didn't have it this time, and there was a whole lot of other things, circumstances around it. Justin certainly ran his race all by himself out in lane seven. And, you know, the young boy, Kristen Cole, and I'm very certain that Andre is not going to let those guys just come in and hand them a medal. So I am quite certain that he wanted to give himself an opportunity to be in the race to actually compete against those guys.
Donovan Bailey with us on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. I know I'm putting you in a hypothetical situation here, Donovan, but yeah. I would love to know your thoughts on you in your prime versus Usain Bolt. Did you ever dream about that? Did you ever think about that? And if you have, what comes to mind?
You know what? Not at all. I mean, one of the great things about athletes and generation is that everyone, you know, champions and generations, everyone gets to be the man. You know, before me was there was Carl Lewis who dominated, and then there's Linford Christie who dominated, and there was me who dominated. And then, of course, Justin came in and Maurice, and there's some issues with them. But Usain, you know, obviously is in a league by himself. And one of the things that he did was whatever mark I set or the aforementioned champions, he just put it in another stratosphere. One of the things I was never afraid of is anyone I compete against in my era. And, you know, and to be the very best in the world and the very best in history in my era is all I could ask. And that's why it is that respect due to someone like Usain, because you know what he's done is raised the bar so high that it's definitely quite difficult for the young generation, Andre and Christian Coleman and the other young guys coming up. It's going to be quite difficult.
Justin Gatlin at 35 years old wins the race running a 9.92. As you alluded to there, Donovan, there certainly is a checkered past with him. How do you feel about Gatlin being the one to win the gold medal in London?
Well, number one, you guys know how I feel about cheaters. That's the number one thing. You guys know it's quite public that I detest it, and I definitely think that lifetime bans are things that should occur, especially when people have had two drug tests. I mean, I don't know all the circumstances under Gatlin, but these are the reports that we get from the IAAF and WADA, you know. So, I mean, like Seb Cole says, it really is not a day for the marquee event. The marquee event in every single world championships, every single Olympics, is the 100 meters. And certainly, you know, Justin winning it is, you know, it doesn't bode well for the sport. It doesn't bode well for advertising. It doesn't bode well for fans because he beat a fan favorite and a clean athlete, Usain Bolt, doing it. But that being said, WADA and the IAAF, they have set, you know, what the standards are, and Justin was eligible to be running according to the rules. So even my feeling that he shouldn't be there, it doesn't really matter. He is the world champion. He'll be recognized by me as the world champion because according to the rules of the IAAF, he's supposed to be there.
So, Donovan, you know, Usain Bolt, obviously, his record speaks for itself. The most dominant athlete of his era by some margin. 31 years old, though, we see Gatlin winning at 35. Are you convinced that Bolt is done, or do you think there could be a comeback in the offing once he realizes what retirement can bring for an athlete?
Well, that he's going to be old and fat like me. No, listen, I don't think that Usain is going to reconsider retirement, but I am also not in his head. So again, all I am is speculating as someone who's been in his shoes.
Sure.
So ultimately, I think that he I don't think that he will be far away from track and field. I'm very certain that there's, you know, there's something for him to do, and the IAAF and the IOC will ensure that the greatest, you know, track and field guy on and off the track that they have will have a particular strong role. But I, you know, I can't see him undoing it. But then again, you know, Michael Jordan went away and came back, and you know, a couple other major stars went away and came back. So it, you know, Usain's legacy also. The other thing is Usain also understands that his legacy is at another level, and I'm very certain that he doesn't want to tarnish that.
Great
coming back and coming back and doing what he wants to do.
Great of you to take time today, Donovan, and I know you're part of CBC's coverage this coming weekend of the IAAF World Championship, so we'll be watching. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Definitely tune in next week. Hopefully the Canadian relay team can get some medals. We can get to the stands. We can definitely get to the podium.
Beautiful. Donovan Bailey.
Thanks, Donovan.
Hit him up on Twitter. Obviously, two-time Olympic gold medalist. Hit him up on Twitter, at Donovan Bailey. So, bit of a mixed message there on the Gatlin part of it, which is two-time positive drug test. And I know that Gatlin had an 8-year suspension levied in 2006, which on appeal was reduced to 4 years. So he came back in 2010 and on and on and on. So in one breath, Donovan says, well, you know how I feel about two-time drug cheats. There should be lifetime bans. But he's recognized now as the world champion, and so I'll recognize him as well.
Well, and I think that's often the reaction from people who are inside the sport. I mean, even if you're a prominent member of the track and field community, as Donovan Bailey is, you can't control the levers of power. You don't decide on these suspensions. You just have to live by them. And I think everybody understands, hey, Justin Gatlin, you know, served his time as was deemed by the people who run track and field. Now, we just had Sebastian Coe, as Donovan alluded to, come out and say that he's a big believer that they need to, of course, Coe being the president of the IAAF, a former great miler who now is the reigning czar of track and field, for lack of a better term, he's come out and said, we got to keep working toward lifetime bans. He's come out and said that Gatlin should have been suspended for life and should have never been wearing that gold medal around his neck at the World Championships at age 35. But if the czar of track and field can't make that happen, who can?
Right. Thought it was interesting, Donovan saying, I'm not going to get into Andre DeGrasse's head. But then he gave us the answer that I think we all anticipated. This has got to be gnawing at DeGrasse. Oh. Dave, here's the thing. It would be one thing if you could look ahead and say, well, I'll take another run at him next year.
Yeah.
Or we've got an Olympic Games coming up in 2 years and Bolt's going to be a part of it and I can take my chances then. This was it. Like, it's over. Usain Bolt is almost 31 years old and he's retiring. So there's no opportunity for Andre DeGrasse to do this down the road. It's over, it's done, it's settled, and he'll never have another opportunity.
Donovan Bailey just talked about how Bolt's legacy is on another level from any other track star that's come before him. And the idea that DeGrasse had a chance at the very end of Bolt's career to have this incredible torch-passing moment. Like, imagine if it would have been Andre DeGrasse with that gold medal around his neck and Usain Bolt coming up behind him in second or third or whatever it turned out to be. Or fourth, if Justin Gatlin came second, as it might have happened. We'll never know, but imagine if it would have happened. That wouldn't that be the ultimate launching point? To have the torch passed to you in Bolt's final race. You beat Bolt. You knock off the great, fading master of the sport. To set up your reign at age 22 as the next master of the sport. I mean, it was there. It was written for him. The pages were written. I know reporters that had that story written, you know, going into those championships. And then the night before, it's all about to get underway. Hamstring injury, done for the season.
Right. And
it's heartbreaking.
We had Laura Ewing of the Canadian Press on late last week, and she was heading over to London as we talked to her. And I mean, the disappointment was palpable. And that's one of those moments in a not so intensely followed sport in this country, right? There are events.
Yes.
Track and field is an event. It's not a, for lack of a better way to put it, it's not a tracked sport week by week, month by month, even year by year necessarily, Dave, but you know that there are certain benchmarks. And if a Canadian is of consequence and, like DeGrasse is, mm-hmm. had an opportunity to win that race, we'll dial in. And if he had done that, if he had beaten Bolt and won that race on the weekend, front page of every important Canadian newspaper, no question.
Well, it's so much more than that, too. It's like you're a social media phenom suddenly. Like, you're the guy who topples Bolt. Imagine the, we remember how much mileage those photos of Bolt sort of wagging his finger at the grass god and their little kibitzing in those races in Rio got. Like, that was, those were the biggest, some of the biggest moments of the Rio Olympics, right? Their little bromance rivalry thing that they had going on. So this would have taken it to a whole different level, especially since there was some interesting tension between the two of them coming into the race.
Well, Bolt was going on and on again about DeGrasse disrespecting him.
Exactly. So it kind of turned from bromance into something more of a bitter rivalry, with DeGrasse's camp suggesting that Bolt had tried to keep him, in fact, successfully kept him out of that race in Monaco because Bolt didn't want to get beat in his farewell tour. The idea that, you know, Bolt had thought that DeGrasse had disrespected him by speaking about how Bolt was slowing down in his old age. All that stuff was incredibly interesting. And so, yeah, like, this is one of those what would have been that we'll go over for years. Like, until next Olympics, we'll bring it back up because DeGrasse will be back in the spotlight, and it'll be like, that's the frustrating thing in track and field. Like, Usain Bolt became one of the biggest celebrities in the world, showing up in people's consciousness once every 4 years. Think about that. And so Andre DeGrasse, the next time anybody's really going to pay supreme attention to him, it's not till 2020 in Tokyo.
I just wonder, and Dave, we can't do the math on this because we can't ever know what not participating this weekend may have cost him in dollars.
Oh, it's millions.
Millions of dollars. Which, as much as anything else, the competitor, yeah. The businessman, he'd be just as down and out about that as the competitor would be. I mean, it's a huge chunk of change. Sponsorships and all that stuff.
Global stuff.
Yeah.
Global stuff that could have been there for him if he would have been the man to topple Bolt.
Hey, Zodog and Noodles are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament. It goes Saturday, September the 23rd at Woodbine Racetrack. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. And for every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Jesse Barfield coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour on Twitter, defending Marcus Stroman. We'll get into the ups and the downs of Stroman this year. The one thing we can all agree on, he's been absolutely fantastic consistently on the mound. So looking forward to talking to Jesse. TSN 1050 Sound Wars, another segment coming up on the other side. Stay with us. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app.
It's time for a TSN 1050 Sound War.
Whoa, what a hit that was!
This is the worst one for sure.
It's 4:51, and you're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050 with Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk. It's time for another TSN 1050 Sound Wars. But first, here's the winner from today's Sound Wars battle between gastric bypass surgery and Dreger's French dart guy. Who is it?
You were a month away from having to go messy.
We talked about this last time. I think it looks pretty thick right now.
You have a river running through the side that's cutting in deep.
You're a month away from gastric bypass surgery.
O-Dog and Brian McCabe, a couple ex-Leafs teammates, going at it, and that one wins pretty significantly. So gastric bypass surgery moves on.
As it should. Rightly so.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of O-Dog later on in these brackets. I'm still leaning catch-up overall, but we'll see.
It's going to be O-Dog on O-Dog in the final.
O-Dog on O-Dog crime. All right, so now it's time for the best sound bites once again to go head-to-head, which allows you to decide which one survives. Here's another TSN 1050 Sound War. It's brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. This is soundbite seed number 3 against seed number 14. Soundbite number 3, Phil Kessel misunderstands Pierre Maguire's post-period question about his cardiovascular fitness.
How's your breath?
It's not good, eh?
No, I meant in terms of conditioning.
Oh.
This guy. All right, and this is soundbite number 14. This one-handed catch by Argos receiver S.J. Green is just as amazing as Hoagie's call of it.
Back to pass is Ray. Has time. Now it breaks down. He throws one toward Green. Oh! Oh!
Oh, what a catch! SJ Green, a remarkable one-handed catch!
Okay, so go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite soundbite. Seed number 3, Kessel's Not Good, eh? Or seed number 14, SJ Green's Catch, as called by Hoagie. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaws grocery stores. Hour number 2 of Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk coming up next. We'll lead things off with Jesse Barfield, the ex-Blue Jay, who on Twitter this weekend told Marcus Stroman to keep being Marcus. Few ex-Blue Jays are stepping up in defense of the pitcher. Jesse's one of them. We'll get into it next. Stay with us, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.